BizScoops is proudly produced by NewsScoop.
Good day to you and welcome to BizScoops for business news local and international. My name is Isabel Potgieter. On the show today, South Africa will present its case to the United States Trade Representative this week, and we talk to political and trend analyst JP Landman about the country's municipal system. The economist Waldo Kriegel talks about the price and value of a rugby ticket. In international business news, Samsung Electronics expects its operating profit to increase almost 19-fold. In investment news, Dis-Chem founders Ivan and Lynette Saltzman sold more than 9 million worth of company shares. And we conclude our series with Erica Liebenberg from Just Money. She gives important advice for people who plan to earn money by working online. South Africa will present its case to the United States Trade Representative this week as part of a three-day hearing in Washington on proposed new tariffs affecting 60 countries. The U.S. is considering additional import duties of 10% or 12.5%, arguing that countries have failed to adequately enforce bans on goods linked to forced labor. South African trade officials will join representatives from several other countries in opposing the proposed measures. The World Bank has recommended that South Africa extend its 15% corporate tax rate to all special economic zones. The Minister of Trade, Industry and Competition, Parks Tau, says the proposal, together with other options to expand the zones, will be assessed. At present, the reduced tax rate applies only to selected special economic zones. The recommendation aims to encourage investment. We are now joined by the political and trend analyst, JP Landman, discussing what is being done to change our municipal system in order to safeguard funds for maintenance and capital investment. JP, last week you explained why national and provincial governments can't merely step in to resolve issues on municipal level as stipulated in our constitution. There is, however, a redesign in the system in the works.
Absolutely. Government has published a draft white paper for public comment. Comments, I think, closed at the end of May, and it's now in the process of being finalized. Now, we can't talk about all the proposals in the draft white paper, but essentially they want to redesign the entire system. Of course, I think there's realization that the current system doesn't work, and therefore you have to change it. It's as simple as that.
And is this possible within the Constitution?
So the Constitution puts a constraint on national government, but not a complete ban. And you've got to navigate between these two. So in main, what are the proposals contained in the draft white paper? First of all, to move to a single-tier system outside the metros. In other words, do away with a local government, local municipalities, and district municipalities. Abolish that. Move to a one-tier system. Secondly, move away from the one-size-fits-all model, which we currently have, and allocate different powers to different municipalities depending on their ability to handle functions and to handle responsibilities. So you take, for example, two national functions. The one is housing, the other one is police. In terms of the white paper, it would be possible to delegate some of those functions to strong enough local municipalities. So do away with one size fits all.
The content of this insert is also available on the So What podcast on Spotify. We now have the economist, Professor Waldo Kriegel, on the line with us. Professor Kriegel, with Springbok rugby fever currently running high, you're talking about the price of a rugby ticket today. How do economists view the value of something like a rugby ticket?
Last Saturday, the Springboks ran out against England at a packed Ellis Park. But on the Tuesday before, the stadium was on track to be only half empty. Tickets started at 950 Rand and sales were slow. Fans were doing the maths, so SA Rugby blinked. They cut the cheapest tickets to 650 and some blocks to 450, and the stadium filled up. So how do economists think about ticket prices? We should start with what a seat actually is. It costs the union almost nothing extra to let one more person through the gate. And the moment that the whistle blows for the start of the game, an empty seat is worth exactly zero. You can't sell Saturday's seat on Sunday. The standard tool for managing this is tiered pricing. Halfway line seats for the corporates, cheaper seats behind the poles, and everyone sorts themselves by what they're willing to pay. Economists who study sport keep finding that teams charge too little, but a full stadium also sells parking, food, and replica jerseys. And it looks better on television, where the real money is. There's one more constraint, and that isn't in a textbook diagram. Fans have a sharp sense of fairness. The supporters who paid 950 rand early on, the loyal ones, they watched everyone else pay 450 for the seat next to them. So next time, they'll wait. The price of a seat has to do three jobs at once. Fill the ground, fund the game, and keep the faith with the fans. Last weekend, it managed to do two out of three.
Thank you. That was Professor Waldo Kriegel, an economics professor at the Northwest University's Business School. If you'd like to hear more from Professor Kriegel, you can listen to his daily podcast called The Economic Minute on Spotify and Anchor FM. Samsung Electronics expects its operating profit to increase almost 19-fold for the April to June quarter, driven by soaring global demand for artificial intelligence memory chips. The South Korean technology giant forecasts quarterly operating profit of 89.4 trillion won, while sales are expected to reach about 171 trillion won. Samsung is due to release its full quarterly financial results later this month. Dis-Chem founders Ivan and Lynette Saltzman sold more than 9 million worth of company shares on the open market on June 30. According to a notice to shareholders, the transactions formed part of the founders' forfeitable share plan. The share sales follow Ivan's retirement as Dis-Chem's chairman and executive director at the end of June. The Saltzman family remain a significant shareholder in the JSE-listed retailer. Before we say goodbye, we are joined by Erica Liebenberg of Just Money. We conclude our conversation today with important advice for people who decide to earn money online. Erica, what are some of the dangers to look out for when seeking online income?
Scams have become really hard to spot. But the good news is that even though the tactics are changing and, you know, the scammers are refining their techniques, most of the fake make money online schemes tend to rely on the same set of warning signs. And a big one is when upfront payment is required, because legitimate job or income opportunities are not going to require you to pay an upfront fee to access work or earnings. That's a big red flag. Another big one is these guaranteed income claims. No legitimate online income method can promise you fixed or risk-free returns. They don't exist. Big one, and this is for scams in general, pressure tactics and urgency. Any language or behavior that tries to make you rush a decision, it's a common scam tactic, and it's intended to encourage you to bypass basic safety checks. And then vague job descriptions. This is a big one. And we see this quite often on Facebook. And I see some of these expat pages and work overseas pages tend to be particularly bad for these ones. With this, you'll see there's a lack of clear deliverables. So there's not really a job description as such. There's no information about the industry the client's in, and payment terms tend to be vague or not stipulated at all. That signals a big risk. That's an elevated risk. If you see that, steer clear. And then the other big one is crypto or forex schemes, which promise daily returns. You cannot promise daily or passive returns. It is a well-established scam indicator.
Can you explain step by step how to start earning online in South Africa?
Yeah, there are five basic steps involved. The first is that you need to really audit your skills and time. Be honest with yourself about what you can do and how many hours per week you can realistically commit to. And, you know, online income, like anything else, it rewards consistency, not bursts of effort. So there's no point starting something if you don't have at least the basic skill set needed and if you cannot commit the time needed to accomplish that task. The second one is, and we talked about it earlier, we touched on it earlier, pick that one method and commit for 30 days, because if you spread yourself too thin across multiple platforms, you're just going to dilute your effort. If you focus on one platform, you'll be able to build momentum much more rapidly. Then step three is set up your profile or platform properly. You need to invest some time and effort in this. Whether it's an Upwork profile or a Fiverr gig, a Shopify store, you need to be clear about your services, provide examples of your work preferably if you can, price realistically, very important, and provide accurate payout details. And then step number four is you need to pitch or list yourself consistently. And here for freelancers, we really recommend you need to aim for at least 5 quality work pitches or applications per week, because again, consistent effort is key. Lackluster effort, it's not going to get you where you need to be. And then step five is build trust and reinvest. The first few customer reviews are by far the hardest to earn. So what you can do is initially price lower to build a bit of credibility, build your client base, and then reinvest your early earnings into the things that you need to grow your business. You know, the skills, the tools, and the visibility that are going to get you where you need to be.
Do you pay tax on online income in South Africa?
Yes. All online income earned by South African tax residents is taxable under South African tax law. So if you are a tax resident, that means that, you know, you are liable for paying tax in this country. If you're an expat and you're paying tax overseas and, you know, that country has a dual income tax arrangement with South Africa, then you will not necessarily be liable for tax here. But for most young people, they would be South African tax residents. And it really doesn't matter whether the income comes from freelancing, surveys, platforms, YouTube, it makes no difference. If you earn it, you have to declare it. And, you know, the big cautionary here is don't be tempted not to declare this income. SARS has expanded its use of third-party data from banks and other payment and from payment providers. And that means that side hustles and platform income is far easier to detect than it used to be. It's not invisible anymore. This small or irregular online income, you need to declare it. But the flip side of that is that tax deductions are available for your online work as well. And this includes things like internet and data costs, you know, any equipment that you're using, like laptops and accessories, software subscriptions, online tools. And if you have a home office, you can actually lease yourself space. There are strict SARS criteria that you need to meet, but that can be a substantial tax deduction. So it's really worth looking into that.
And that was Erica Liebenberg of Just Money. Thanks for joining us today. We'll be back next week with more business news, local and international, on BizCoops. My name is Isabel Potgieter. Goodbye.
And this was another edition of BizCoops, proudly produced by Newscoop.